One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
Three, RBKD. Happy MLK Day. We should all strive to try and be the person that MLK was. We're playing some MLK themed songs. I don't think if I've heard of this one. Who is this?
Common?
This is John Legend and Common. This is one of the theme songs from Glory, or from Selma.
Yeah, it's a great, that's a nice soundtrack though.
Yeah, it's a good soundtrack for Selma, so it's good.
Yep.
So go ahead and take today, especially if you have the day off, but even if you don't, try and you don't know about MLK, read up on him a little bit. And just incredibly inspirational guy.
Or listen to Roger Round today.
Or listen to
some random factoids about MLK Jr.
And I'll also tell you at Instant Serious, we always do a Black Sports Spotlight of the Week on Instant Serious, and we name off a bunch of great leaders in civil rights and sports.
Instant Serious with our guys
at 8.
Patrick Davis at 8 o'clock. Got Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis. And then what really matters more at 8 o'clock, that would be Instant Serious.
Look, he's not going to be representing Black Sports Spotlight of the Week. We will be.
Yeah,
so.
You're damn right. Yeah,
my host Anthony White does it every week. He does a great job. So.
Cool.
My coach.
Very cool. We'll be listening to that. Obviously, Rod's Rant is coming up next segment. So stick around. We appreciate y'all being here. It is the All-American Rod Babers. It is Patrick Davis. I'm Kevin Dunn. We're live. We're local. We're digital. Get the Horn app. Get to hornfm.com. We're going to get back to... Got to get back to the Cowboys here. Guys, we kind of threw this in, maybe it's off the record, so let's go ahead and start with this, because I'm glad we got to the train robbing, which is still baffling. But, man, some of the reactions, you got to give CBS credit, and the director was all over it. The camera people were all over it. Man, it is funny with that organization, 25 years, and it was 95 was the last time they won a Super Bowl, and it's as proud of an organization as there is out there. Steelers have the most titles, but the Cowboys are America's team.
Oh, yeah.
Rod, it felt like the fan base had adopted the owner's take on this year, which was Super Bowl or bust. It's 23-17, 5 minutes to go, and they show a nice lady, I'm sure nice, in the stands, and she's bawling.
Grown woman.
Only. I mean, bawling like...
Inconsolable.
My mom would have been if she was at the Rose Bowl and Vince got stopped at the one-inch line. Like that type.
Would have been a lot of Longhorn tears that night.
Of bawling.
Yeah.
I understand when the game's over, and I would... probably recalibrate looking at this team throughout the year and saying you really thought they were going to be in the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl, but you should have gotten past the wild card. This is the second team now with the Rams in the early 2000s who scored 500 points in the league and didn't get past the wild card round.
Yeah.
So I get it, but some of the shots were epic. And of course, you are America's team. The country had fun with it today.
Oh, yeah, of course they did, because there are more people watching the Cowboys. They hate watch the Cowboys. Yep. Cowboys are the America's team.
They're the Yankees.
Not only because people love them, they have a huge fan base, but also because people hate watch the Cowboys, yep. Right? So it's like Rush Limbaugh used to talk about this all the time. He's like, no, half people listening to me, they hate listen. They're listening because they want to hear something that makes them, that affirms or reaffirms how much they hate me.
Right.
Or confirms it, whatever way. So
reaffirms what they believe,
what they
politically, sports-wise, whatever.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people watching the Cowboys, they're watching to watch the Cowboys fail and go, see, I told you the Cowboys were a dysfunctional franchise. I told you they're not prepared. I told you they're not well-coached. And a lot of America, you know, takes a little satisfaction that I don't, because I'm a quasi-Cowboys fan when I'm not rooting for the Texans. And who am I to talk? Because my franchise is the Texans. They are a fuster cluck of, of epic proportions.
You're me rooting for Texans in the 80s when I'd watch them play and then go watch real college football. I always say that. I'm not kidding around when I say that.
Oh, no.
My eyes were good enough at that point to where I go, well, I can see the difference here.
Dude, Texas football the last 10 years is like that.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Hey, you know what?
What are you talking about in the 80s?
We actually look a lot better the last 10 years than some of those 80s teams. And I just
a little
mean,
darker.
Well, that counts for me.
No, but I can't.
No, you don't. And if we fail aesthetically, with a good look.
Yeah, but you know what? This is why we can link this, because the Cowboys and the Texas Longhorns are often connected in our minds mm-hmm. the way we cover them. But oftentimes, both of these fan bases, they are, whether they call them victims or, you know, whatever, but they are oftentimes, they're their own worst enemy when it comes to these expectations. Right. And they're unrealistic expectations. And I understand that fan bases, when your team is good, you want to say, hey, man, we're good. But look at Texas this year. Right. Look at everybody.
Look at Texas right now. I'm seeing more tweets. Quinn Ewers.
Exactly. Like
Bijan Robinson.
And you know what?
Xavier
Worthy.
It'll be a 10. You throw Billingsley in there. They should win the Big 12.
Whoa, stop. Exactly. We're doing it again.
We're doing it again.
Again, stop.
Yeah. And by the time the season rolls around next year, this year, later on this year, we'll all be at 9 to 10 wins because we've psyched ourselves into it.
Not me.
In this bubble.
I'm at 3, tops 5.
All this propaganda being pumped into our Twitter accounts. No, right. But you're right. It's that thing. We all live in these social media universes.
Or you hear stories about yours all spring.
Exactly. And how, he's going to be a program-changing player. And
he's
maybe
tearing
he will
up
be.
Our secondary. Well, no S.
Exactly. Same thing about our D-line this year, right? So, Texas D-line is
Patrick
so good.
Patrick did in a 7-on-7 game the other day.
So I think that's what it is, man, the unrealistic expectations. By the way, Jerry wants that because CDC wants it because it's good for business.
Right.
Because you're going to buy more merchandise.
Yep.
And you're going to buy them tickets.
And you keep on believing.
And you keep.
I'll believe every year.
Dude, that's why churches are in business. Hope.
Right.
Hope sells. It always does. And that's
fitting on MLK Day.
Exactly. And that's what they're selling. They're selling hope. No, the Cowboys will be good one day.
Right.
You want to be around when they're good, though. You want to be around when they're good.
People buy lottery tickets every day.
They exactly. Do. Yeah. Same premise. Thank
every
you.
Single time. But that next one.
Hey, but there's a chance.
They're not next.
There's
one.
A chance.
Same thought process. Totally agree with you. So that's the Cowboys fan base.
There were a couple, though. There was one dude who was consoling his woman. There was one sister who just was fantastic. She had like a Zeke jersey on, and she just had that look. Like, she wasn't crying, but she had a look like, y'all let me down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm watching this.
I mean, it was disappointing. I picked the 49ers, but I didn't expect the Cowboys to basically no-show on offense. 16 points.
So if it's
17 points.
If it's the most undisciplined team, and it has been all year, and you could easily say that is one of the top three reasons that they lost this game.
Yeah.
Clock management wasn't good.
Nope.
We know that's been a problem. Why do you keep Mike McCarthy?
You keep him because you heard bells initially, right? That's what Jerry Jones said, that he was so enamored, so fixated.
Yeah,
right?
But we've been married. That's
yeah, so the honeymoon phase is over, but this year you did win 12 games. So.
You did.
So you
were a 3 seed.
You were a 3 seed. And
in an awful division.
It's an awful division. That's true. But, okay, what's the upgrade? Here's my thing. You can fire Mike McCarthy, and I got no problem with it. But you have to give me a guaranteed upgrade. If it's Sean Payton, hell yes. Every day, all day, twice on Sunday. Yes, do that. Trade for him. Give
what
up
if it's Kellen Moore?
For Sean Payton. No.
Kellen Moore.
That's not a guaranteed upgrade
what
over Mike McCarthy.
What if it's Dan Quinn?
I don't like that.
That's not a guaranteed upgrade.
So this is, I'm sitting with Kellen Moore. I'm like, I get it. I think he is a good offensive mind. I think he is terrible in game. I don't think he makes adjustments. I think the fact that they continue to not try and go to Zeke late in games and find ways to use him. Look, I get that he's not what he used to be. I get the O-line's not what it's supposed to be. You cannot have all this money and everything tied up in something and then pretend like it's not there. He is better than a lot of backs in this league. And even if you're like, okay, then it's Pollard. It's Clement.
Pollard, right.
And it's somebody else, and they can get it to work. But to not have the run game and not be balanced because, well, it didn't work in the first quarter. It didn't work in the first quarter for a lot of teams.
I think that's completely fair criticism of him as a play caller. He does get pass happy and cute happy.
When has he had the guy to learn under? What learning tree has he been able to be under? Because he hasn't really had that yet. And I think if you're able to find...
Jason Garrett. So let's not... come on, Patrick.
All right, look. Their tree is the same height. But you go, yeah, so if you're able to bring in a guy, they go, hey, look, if you can bring an offensive mind to teach Kellen Moore, even if it's an older guy or somebody, but to bring in somebody to help form this team, to give them an identity, how you talked about earlier, and give them something that they can be, then I think, yeah, maybe Kellen Moore will be ready to take over this team in a few years or take over another team. But right now, how do you sign a guy and go, Well, you know, your offense scored 16 points in a playoff game against a team that you should have beaten. You also are penalized constantly, mm-hmm. so you have no control over that. And you're either going to have to blame your position coaches or blame your head coach.
And
but
your last
blame
play
somebody.
Call was stupid.
Yeah, and that was a terrible play call.
Terrible.
I don't get, like, there's a point of it where I get that he may get another offer. He may go somewhere else. Dan Quinn may go somewhere else, especially after how this season ended.
Kellen Moore's meeting with five teams. There's a good chance he will go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's a good chance. You know what? Have him. I do not think he's going to be a successful head coach this run. I think he has all the tools to be there later in life. I think he is a very intelligent guy. I just don't think he's been able to be under that learning tree yet.
I think you make excellent points, and I agree with you. I wouldn't trust it right now.
But I don't think Mike McCarthy is that learning tree either. So as long as you keep Mike McCarthy, you are right where you are. You are a first-round team as Mike McCarthy's there. Because, I mean, who do you bring in? What do you fix to make yourself a Super Bowl contender if the penalties are still going to be there? Who fixes that?
Okay, but penalties, Rod,
a good coach.
They go to the head coach usually, don't
yeah.
they?
I think it's a direct reflection of the head coach, especially when it's been a problem all year. It's not like it's like, oh, they had 14 penalties this game, and that really hurt them. That was uncharacteristic of the Cowboys.
No, this
like,
was characteristic.
They are second, they're first in the NFL in penalties. I think they're second in penalty yards or second in penalties.
I think it's second
in
penalty,
first in penalty
whatever.
Yards. Either way, they're top two in
they're
penalties.
At the front of the pack.
Yeah, exactly, where you don't want to be. And about Kellen Moore, listen, I'm a big Kellen Moore fan, and I said when he went to the Cowboys initially, I said he's going to be a success because a lot of people I trusted in the coaching community told me that, no, this guy is a wonder kid. Like, he is mm-hmm. legit football genius.
Overall, he has been, you'd say,
and
right?
I think he has. I think he's actually exceeded expectations for him. I think the problem is when people comparing Kellen Moore to Mike McCarthy and other coaches, you kind of forget how young he is. He's only 33 years old, so he's really young. You got to throw that into the mix. We started talking about what his achievement level could be. And I think people are looking at what Kellen Moore could be right now, and they're looking at him thinking, seeing a young Sean McVay or seeing themselves a young Kyle Shanahan or something along those lines. And by the way, people still criticize Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan's in-game management and decision-making. I think they did it in this game. So, you know what I mean? Like, people are going to criticize a young play caller's decisions either way. People are still calling Shanahan an idiot. For some of the play calls, I'm like, I don't know if he's an idiot. I think, he just had a questionable decision that he made.
I was reading a 49er blog this morning, and one of that I like, and they get into 28-3 and then got into this fourth quarter. Like, give Shano a break
yeah.
there, man.
And no, that's what I'm saying. Like, and I feel kind of the same way about Kellen Moore. Like, no, I get it. The offense had issues. It was the best. It's still one of the top three offenses in the league. So he's still considered to be a guy that's way ahead of his developmental like trajectory. Like, he is way ahead of the game. And that's why people are like, well, if you're looking at it and you're trying to project what he's going to be, he has the learning curve of being one of those elite offensive minds. Will he be? I have no idea. We don't know that. But they're trying to, you know, buy low, get on the ground floor of this thing before Kellen Moore is already a top name and you can't get him.
And at the end of the day, guess who's got a boner for him?
Jerry.
Trey Elling does. He's a kid. No, Jerry, yes, you're right.
I would say, I didn't know he liked him that much.
Jerry.
Jerry would, you know, maybe this is all about him being the highest paid coordinator in the league. Maybe he wants to get enough leverage and have his name out there enough where Jerry go, all right, man, how much to have you stay? I'll make you the highest paid OC in the league. Will you stay? Because as you pointed out, he submitted his name for the TCU job.
A still job that, baffling.
That we all thought like, oh, TCU, you'd be lucky to get a Kellen Moore. No,
yeah.
He said, I want you guys to consider me, which means maybe he just wants to go to interviews, or maybe he wants out, or maybe he just wants a raise. We don't really know yet exactly, but I know one day he wants to be a head coach. We do know that.
Well, he's getting his interviews. I said five. I think it's five.
You might be at more. It might be at more than that. I mean, no pun intended. But he's probably – I don't know if I've heard a hotter name, honestly. His name comes up for every head coaching vacancy. Every head coaching vacancy, his name comes up like, oh, what about Kellen Moore?
So I think it's the McVay-Shano effect.
It could be. Which is
well,
young.
I say that. Matt LaFleur.
Yeah,
we can go through the list
exactly.
Now.
You want that young, hot name. I think you're exactly right. Then they think he could be that. Like I said, I don't know if he's going to be that, but it's helping him. That those guys and their reps are helping him right now.
It is. So we'll see what they do there. But getting back to the game, this one just stings. You know, I don't know if they go to Tampa Bay and get a dub, but that would have been the matchup. I actually, in some ways, would feel better about that because you would abandon the run game. You'd try and go pick on a secondary. Give Jordan Whitehead credit. He played pretty well. A lot of that was against the run. But a secondary you can get after, just like the Niners. To me, they're more run defense oriented, where the Niners are more getting after you when we know you have to pass. And when you've got no run game, well, you know they have to pass.
Yeah. No, it's if with the Cowboys, I think for you're going forward, looking at, you know, what they got to fix and how do they improve on this blueprint, I think their first order of business is try to keep the coordinators. Because if you lose Dan Quinn,
you're losing one of them, man.
I don't know if it's a guarantee.
Broncos are set to interview Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore on Tuesday. You guys going to fly up together?
Well, Dan Quinn has pretty much stated he wants to stay. Now, he could get an offer he can't refuse, which could be Denver, by the way. But he's passed up interview. I think he wants to stay with the Cowboys for a little longer to keep building this thing. So I think it'll be easier to convince him than Kellen Moore to stay. Because Kellen Moore is young and up and coming, and he sees his fast rising star.
Well, and that leads into the other problem, though, is if you bring in a high level coach, or you try and get in that high level coach, what coach wants to come in and go, all right, you've already got your staff?
That's true too.
So there becomes that hard part of, all right, well, we want to keep Dan Quinn, we want to keep Kellen Moore, we want you too, but.
Yeah, right. Coaches like to pick their own coaches. That's something but if you come work for Jerry Jones, you understand Jerry Jones is going to make some rules.
No, I get that.
Everybody knows
that. But that's why a lot of coaches don't want to go there.
That's also true.
So that'll just be an interesting part going forward. I think it is, all right, if you lose Kellen Moore, well, now you probably want to get a different coach and you want to go offensive. You lose Dan Quinn, you might want to get a new coach and go defensive.
Yeah. And I wonder, man, if they lost either one of those guys, where do you go? Like What's your list look like for the guys to replace a Dan Quinn? I guess Vic Fangio's at the top of the list.
Fangio could be.
You bring Fangio right back in. Yeah, I think he runs a different system, but they're multiple, so he can figure it out.
I know where you go. You go to Pluckers. You got a lot of options in Dallas. You go there, you go sit up at the bar, and you say, let me tell you all about it. I know there are probably lots of people at Pluckers all over the state. Get to Pluckers.com to find one near you watching the Cowboys games. As I've said, watching Texas games, it's actually nice to be around people that, you know, I always say misery loves company. So you got a lot of Cowboys fans. It's a terrific sports bar. You got TVs all over the place, and they have the best wings in the state. Once again, Pluckers.com. You'll find 7 locations in Austin. You can get delivery via DoorDash, or you can just order online at the website and go pick it up. If you are going to go there and you think it may be busy, download the Pluckers Club app. You can virtually save your place in line. That has been a game changer for Pluckers fans. My favorite place to watch sports and to get something good to eat, it is Pluckers. Pluckers, if you don't like our wings, we will give you the bird. What are we ranting about?
MLK. Got MLK Beautiful. Day tribute in Raj Rant of the Day. I'll give you some little known facts about the great MLK, and we'll do that coming up next in Raj Rant of the Day right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to RBKD. Time for Raj Rant of the Day. And just want to give you guys a couple of little known facts about Martin Luther King Jr. on MLK Day. And if you are celebrating MLK Day, and you should be, wish someone a happy MLK Day. We don't do that. It's one of those holidays where you don't really wish someone a happy MLK Day or say happy MLK Day or merry MLK Day, whatever. But do it. You'll probably freak somebody out. But maybe they'll start doing it too. We can start a new trend.
Or maybe they'll go home and do what you did and be like, you know what? I know something about MLK, but I need to really look at this.
He is definitely worth rabbit holing.
I've done a bunch of it.
Fascinating. He's a fascinating human being.
And the connections around it with history, too. You'll be on a different rabbit hole. It has nothing to do with him.
Exactly.
But it's connected.
But it's connected. Yep. And matter of fact, a lot of these factoids are connected. Okay, so let's start because there's a ton that I want to sift through here. So we'll start. Try to start with the early years, and then we'll make our way to the tragic death, and then get to, obviously, how he is remembered and some of the factoids in little nuggets. It's there. Okay, so Martin Luther King actually was not born Martin Luther King. He was actually born Michael. Yeah, he was a Michael.
I don't think I ever knew that.
Yeah, his dad, who was a preacher, his father was a pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. and he went to Germany to study the Protestant Reformation, and he was really enamored with Martin Luther, who led the Protestant Reformation, and he apparently was so captivated by it, he changed his son's name from Michael to Martin Luther.
Interesting.
And that's why you get Martin Luther King. Would have been Michael King. Would have still been the same if it was Michael King?
It still would have been the same.
MLK. Still would have worked out. Maybe it wouldn't have been MLK. Maybe we don't have the Luther. Maybe it would have been just Michael. I don't know what the middle name would have been. Just Michael something King.
It was Michael King Jr., right?
It was Michael King Jr., but I think he made it Martin Luther King.
So it's really not a junior.
That's a good point.
I'm sorry. I know we've... Rod and I talk way too much about junior in the second.
That's a good point. So maybe he should have been, I don't know. I got to go look at it. Go see what his father's actual name is. Look that up for me. Now we got a mystery we got to solve.
Never mind. No, his dad made the change too, because his dad is Martin Luther King Sr.
Okay.
So if you make the change, then you're good.
I wonder if he changed his too at the time. Man, it's weird. Now you got me all freaked out. I got to check that out. Now I got to do some more rabbit holing. See, this is what happens. okay. Also, tragic story about MLK as a youngster. At the age of 12, there are reports that he tried to commit suicide. May of 1941, when his grandmother passed away after a heart attack. At the time, he was disobeying his parents and going to watch a parade when they told him not to. He came home, gotten in an argument with his parents, and they also told him about his grandmother passing away. He was so distraught, he went upstairs and jumped off the second-story window.
I have heard this before, right, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, he was just really distraught in a bad place, and that can happen. But if you are in a bad place, go talk to somebody, please.
Is he really injured, or...?
He got injured, but ended up being okay. Thank God MLK survived. Where would we be without him?
Yeah.
MLK, also known for being one of the greatest public speakers in the history of the world, got a C in public speaking during his first year at seminary. His father noted that even before going to seminary, that King was one of the best public speakers he'd ever seen. Naturally, whatever caused his professor to give him a C by his final year, Martin Luther King had straight A's and was valedictorian of his class, also student body president.
Can you imagine being that teacher?
I know. You like that.
I gave him a C.
You're that coach that cut MJ.
Right. Exactly. I'm like, well, there's two options here. One, you're a racist. And two is that you're not very good at what you do.
That's what I'm saying.
So you pick.
You pick. Yeah.
I'm giving you two options.
Oh, man. Because something had to go wrong. He was obviously a gifted public speaker. And somebody in this class, you telling me you gave a better grade than Martin Luther King Jr., who was, by the way, he was a genius, too. Like, he was a genius. I'll give you this. He actually entered college at the age of 15.
So were you a Morehouse?
Yep. Martin Luther King was such a gifted student. He skipped grades 9 and 12 before enrolling at Morehouse in 1944, the alma mater of his father and maternal grandfather. Although he was the son, grandson, and great-grandson of Baptist ministers, King did not intend to follow the family vocation until Morehouse president Benjamin E. Mays, a noted theologian, convinced him to go into the church. King was ordained before graduating with a degree in sociology. There you go. Man, could have been really different there. Okay, another little factoid.
Later went to Boston U, I believe, right?
Yeah, he ended up getting doctorate. PhD at Boston University. He ended up with, I think he had 20 different honorary degrees. I mean, the man had he was obviously very, very well educated. Did go to jail 29 times, though. So there you go.
Yeah. There's some stories behind that.
A lot of trumped up charges.
This is not train robbing.
Early on in his life, before he became world famous, he actually survived an assassination attempt for, we really don't even know the reason why, a young lady, I don't know if she was young, actually a lady, Isola Ware Curry. She went to a book signing. Martin Luther King was he was in Harlem at a book signing for his book Stride Toward Freedom. In Bloomstein's department store, when he was stabbed with a letter opener, this woman came up to him, said, "I've been looking for you for 5 years," and then she plunged a 7-inch letter opener into his chest. Tip of the blade came to rest alongside his aorta. Surgeons later said that if he would have sneezed, it probably would have killed him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Easy on the lady with her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And from his bed,
call her a hoe.
No, he did. He issued a statement saying he does not wish any ill will on her and do not harm this woman, saying he's still.
How crazy is that?
He's about nonviolence.
I didn't even know him, okay, and yeah. I want her harmed.
Yeah, no, exactly.
She stabbed me, and I'm like.
You're one of the people like, no, we're going to get her.
Be a better person.
And he's like, no, it's all good. Let her go and let her make it. Yeah. So, MLK But thank God he survived that assassination attempt, the first one on his life there. Another little factoid here. I think he still is actually the youngest man to ever receive the Nobel Peace Prize. There have been five women that have been younger than MLK when he won it, but he's the youngest man to receive the Nobel Peace Prize.
And that's still to this date?
And that is still to this date. Wow. I believe that is still to this date. Women, the ladies out there, shout out. There have been there's a teenager that's won it. A woman.
They develop faster, so.
They're a lot more mature than we are.
Both those things are accurate.
Okay, here's another little factoid for you. How about this? Martin Luther King apparently was a huge, basically was a huge Star Trek fan. Like apparently he's a huge sci-fi fan, but sci-fi wasn't a thing.
Are you kidding me?
No, he was a huge Star Trek fan. And Star Trek really helped invent science, popularized science fiction as a genre.
Invented. You were going to say it made it cool, but
it cool too. Yeah,
no,
you
it didn't
you
do
say.
That.
Did you know that Star
it
Trek
popularized?
Do you know what celebrity made Star Trek possible for America? You're never going to guess it.
No.
Lucille Ball.
What?
Lucille Ball. Everybody thought Star Trek was stupid.
Are you messing with us here?
No, I'm not.
Did you mean this for April?
No, I've heard this too.
Okay.
No, no. It's actually true. Remember Desilu Productions, her and her husband, Desi Arnaz? But she always made all the calls about what would go into production and what wouldn't. And they brought her to, she was really good at picking out talent because I believe Desilu was responsible for The Untouchables, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and The Andy Griffin Show. So Lucy knew what she was doing. But they brought her the Star Trek pilot. And everybody hated it. They thought it was terrible. They brought her that and Mission Impossible. And everybody thought the pilot would be too expensive to film. And she said, no, we'll film it. It's going to be great. People are going to love this thing. Turns out she was right. People ended up loving it. It became a cult classic. So, yeah, you don't
That's
get...
That's crazy. But yeah. MLK was into that.
MLK was into it. Yeah, MLK was into
Star
it.
Star Trek start?
You got to be talking about...
I thought it was later than that.
The early 60s or something. I don't know. My man Patrick can look that up for me.
70s.
So there was a character on the original Star Trek. I think her name was Uhura. Hope I got it right. She was played by Nichelle Nichols, mm-hmm. who incidentally later on went to work for NASA. She actually literally worked for NASA, but she played Star Trek.
Saw her on Shatner's Roast.
Yes, she played the black lady on Star Trek.
Beautiful older lady.
Oh, she was beautiful back then too. Smoking hot. Yeah,
but
no doubt.
She was.
She still got it going.
Oh, 1966, by the way.
Okay, 1966. Thank you very much. So Nichols. She stated that she got a chance to meet MLK because he was such a big fan of the show, and she was thinking about quitting the show because she was the only black person on the show, so uncomfortable for her at that time, blah, 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 blah. Then Nichols stated that when she met Martin Luther King, he told her she could not leave the show because she was not only playing a black person as a main character on TV, but she was also playing a character that didn't conform to the stereotypical black person of the day usually portrayed on television at the time. Rather, Uhura was portrayed as an intelligent member of the crew and an equal to those around her, and she decided to stay because MLK suggested that it'd be good for the people, for the cause. Turns out she was right. Astronaut Ronald McNair, the second black person in space who died on the Challenger explosion, he once told a reporter that he was inspired by Star Trek and by Uhura. And her black character on the show. He said, now Star Trek showed the future where there would be black folk and white folk working together. I just looked at it as science fiction because that wasn't going to really happen. But Ronald saw it as science possibility. He came up during a time when there was Neil Armstrong and all of those guys. So how was a colored boy from South Carolina wearing glasses, never flew a plane, how was he going to become an astronaut? But Ron was one who didn't accept societal norms. He said that was for other people, and he got to be aboard his own Starship Enterprise. That came from one of the bios about him, that
That's
he was a
cool.
big fan too. Yeah. And apparently, remember, I don't know if you watched Star Trek The Next Generation, Whoopi Goldberg, she played a black character on Star Trek. She said she did it because she was a big Uhura fan.
Cool.
From back in the day. MLK was a Trekkie as well. Okay, another random factoid. I'll try to fly out through these because I got
good,
a ton.
Man.
Here's another one. This is actually trying to get toward more of the tragic stories about MLK. They're still really, really interesting. So the FBI, of course, surveilled Martin Luther King Jr. They surveilled him. And now we know from FBI documents, not only did they surveil him and spy on him and bug his room and bug his phones, they actually threatened him, too. The FBI later discovered King was having numerous affairs. Yes, he was a philandering mofo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he likes to get it on with the ladies.
He's not perfect.
And nope, nobody is. So the FBI sent him anonymous letters stating things such as, quote, you're a colossal fraud and an evil, vicious one at that, and threatening to blackmail him. In another letter, supposedly the FBI, they stated, quote, the American public, the church organizations that have been helping Protestants, Catholics, and Jews will know you for what you are, an evil beast. So will others who have backed you. You are done, King. There's only one thing left for you to do. You know what it is. You have just 34 days in which to do it. It went on to say, you are done. There is but one way out for you. You better take it before your filthy, fraudulent self is bared to the nation.
What was the one way out? Committing suicide?
Yeah. That was the one way out. You can go research that yourself.
No, the FBI. I mean, I knew the FBI had spied on him. I also knew they'd use that as blackmail. And
I mean, J. Edgar Hoover thought that Martin Luther
not
King
a good husband.
Was one of the great threats to the American dream, essentially.
Jay missed out on a lot of stuff, didn't he?
J. Edgar was a very misled man.
Every decade just doesn't get nicer for him or better.
No, it doesn't. Okay, how about this one? This is this is another story. This actually comes from, this is about the Lorraine Motel and their time there. So we all know that Martin Luther King, of course, had affairs. He was a philandering man at times in his life.
Not a good husband, we can say
not
that.
Not a good
right?
husband. Yep, great civil rights leader, not a good husband. At the Lorraine Motel, where he was assassinated, he had one of his mistresses there. Georgia Davis had a distinguished career in Kentucky politics and civil rights, but she became famous as Martin Luther King's lover. In her 1995 memoir, she said she and King slept together at the Lorraine Motel the night before he was killed.
Hmm.
Davis, Lukey Ward, and A.D. King. A.D. King was Martin Luther King's brother. They were vacationing in Florida when King asked her to come to Memphis. They had already become lovers. She was 44, 5 years older than him. Okay, like them older. And in the process of a divorce, his attentions, she wrote, were particularly flattering at the time. The three arrived at Lorraine Motel the night of April 3rd, met up with King and others, talked into the early morning. When she went to her room, she wrote in her memoir, I shared the dream, as they both knew he would. She ended up becoming a senator later. After King's murder, Davis was angry and haunted, said, I don't know how I survived 1968. The world seemed upside down at the time. To take that even further, King's affairs with Davis in 2015, the year before this lady died, she wrote that King told her at the Lorraine Motel that, quote, sometimes the load of being a leader gets almost too heavy to bear. Everyone expects you to be perfect all the time. There you go.
Wow.
By the way, Georgia Davis, Kentucky's first black state senator.
Okay.
And also one of Martin Luther King's lovers.
Oh, was she right next to him when he was shot in Memphis?
I don't know if she was right next to him, but she was there.
She was there, obviously, the night before.
Look, how about this? His brother was having an affair, too, at the time. His brother was married, having an affair with a woman, Lucretia Lukey Ward. She was white.
No.
Her name was Lucretia.
No.
L-U-C-R-E-T-I-A.
All right.
Lucretia Ward.
Now you're
having an affair with a black man, Martin Luther King's brother, back in 1960, whatever. Isn't that crazy? Her name is, I'm like, look at her. Hey, look. White Lucretia.
Whoa, she is white, too.
That's a really white. Isn't that crazy?
You know, there's a lot of jokes we made. They're not made today.
No.
But at 12:01,
right.
I'm going to scream a bunch of jokes into a pillow.
Will you tweet them out?
Isn't that unbelievable, though? That Martin Luther King's brother was having a affair with a white Lucretia back then. And
the fact there is a white Lucretia is weird enough.
Yeah.
How about this? Yeah, she died in 1996 at 74 years old.
And she is white. I mean,
she's white.
She looks like, you know, there's...
Oh, yeah. And how about this? A.D. King, traumatized by his brother's murder, struggled to fill his shoes. He dies, found dead following year in a backyard swimming pool. Ruled an accidental drowning. He was 38.
Just that time alone.
Yeah. Okay, real quick, because I know...
63 to 68.
I know I'm running up against here, so I want to be quick here. Martin Luther King was not the only one to die at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis on April 4, 1968. After he was killed, one of the hotel workers, Lorraine Bailey, who the hotel was named after, was so distraught by seeing Martin Luther King be shot on that balcony, she had a heart attack and died later that day.
Wow.
She was, and how about this? This was partially to blame for the delay of being able to get medical help to Martin Luther King because she was the telephone operator at the hotel.
So it was instant? It wasn't even like 4 hours later?
Yeah, she had, no, she died later. She went into a coma and then died later after
right,
the heart
but
attack.
I mean, as yeah. soon
so
she as
went,
she saw
she heard
it,
the shot,
boom.
Went outside, saw Martin Luther King shot, and had a
heart attack.
And she was
coma.
The telephone operator, and they were calling, like, hey, we need the ambulance, we need the police, and nobody was there. So it took a long time for the ambulance to get there because she died on the spot.
Wow.
She was so distraught. Yeah.
Dude, some crazy nuggets there.
Oh, I had a couple of more, and then
yeah,
we're
what do
done
you got?
With this. Also, Martin Luther King was a heavy smoker. He was smoking, actually, when he was shot on the balcony. According to Reverend Kyle, who was there, after King was shot, but before he was taken away by the ambulance, Kyle's removed the package of cigarettes from King's pocket and got rid of the cigarette butts because he was worried about how people would view Martin Luther King as a smoker back in the day.
Back then?
I was like, everybody was smoking back
then. He would have been viewed as one of us.
Everybody smoking
back then. He's a normal guy.
His autopsy revealed he had the heart of a 60-year-old man, maybe because he was smoking a lot.
Yeah.
could be. Also, tragically, Martin Luther King's mother was also assassinated. She was killed. Murdered. Yeah, his mother. Yeah, this is way after that. After he passed away, but his mother actually was also gunned. His mother was gunned down later on.
Killing his mom?
I don't know if it was related to Martin Luther. I don't know if that was it at all. It doesn't really say. It's hard to find a lot of background on it. But his mother was also gunned down. So I mean, his family has a tragic history there.
Man, it's like Kennedy. Like that family.
His family does have some of that. There is some of that. His mother, on June 30, 1974, 69-year-old Alberta Williams King played the organ at Ebenezer Baptist Church. Marcus Wayne Chenault Jr. rose from the front pew, drew two pistols, and began to fire shots. One of the bullets struck and killed King, who died steps from where her son used to preach.
Oof.
Yeah. He said they tried to kill King's father, who was in the congregation, but he killed King's mother instead because she was closer.
Jeez. Wow. Feel like we should
go
out dry on that.
I don't think people know all of this stuff about him. But he was just a fascinating man. I mean, you go rabbit holing, and I mean, I didn't give you half the stuff that I got.
Tonight's a rabbit hole night with MLK.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Exactly what it
Somebody should make a real movie about MLK, not just the manufactured white, you know, I mean, the nice sanitized version. A real one.
Totally.
We can appreciate it.
Totally.
The man
agree.
Was flawed, but
yeah.
hell.
And get into philandering.
Exactly. He was flawed, but he was also magnificent. And you can be both.
You can do both.
Yes.
Most people have some good and have some bad.
Damn
he had
right
a lot
that.
Of good, and definitely there was some imperfections in there as well. Good stuff, Rod. Rod's rant of the day. Up next, we'll get back to the Texas weekend, the portal, the transfer portal. Kind of good for Texas. Two misses, but also the misses, and there were a lot of them in Ames. I was hoping you'd get here, Patrick. I think you know I'm a big U2 fan, but I figured this would be part of it at some point.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I know, we'll get there,
I don't think I've ever heard this.
You have. Hold on.
Nope. I don't think I've ever heard
it. How do you avoid U2?
Go
they
home.
They put all of their songs on your iPod without you asking.
Go home and listen to this, Rob.
I don't think I've ever heard it before.
It's called Pride in the Name of Love. It's basically a tribute to MLK.
Okay.
From the U2.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a fantastic song. That was that wasn't Joshua Tree, was it?
Unforgivable Fire.
Okay. I think Patrick is impressed. I just even knew Joshua Tree.
You know what? Good for you.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. Not good for Texas basketball. It was a tough weekend in Ames. They were just sloppy. I feel like the two main teams we're talking about all day long, it's about being undisciplined or, in this case, really more sloppy. Now, the Cowboys didn't have a ton of turnovers. We know they were undisciplined. Texas did have a bunch of turnovers. They had 20. They had 13 in the first half. They got punked. And then on the flip side, you got Iowa State, who was the ninth best defensive team in the country. But offensively, they had had some games. I mean, they were 1-3 in conference where they kind of worried about that. Rod, if you told me Isaiah Brockington, their best player, who averages 17, has 8, I think Texas has a good chance to win this game. But they didn't.
Didn't matter because Iowa State shot 60% from the field in the second half, 53% from the field in the first half, 56% as a team. And then they were able to win a lot of those, you know, those areas where, you know, Texas has to win, right? When you are not an offensive juggernaut, which, by the way, as you mentioned, Iowa State is not. But in this game, they looked like an offensive juggernaut. And most impressively, or more impressively, I should say, against any what we thought, and I still think, is an elite defense.
Yeah, it is.
In Texas. Or but
it was until
it
this
was.
Game.
But, yeah, they dismantled that Texas defense. And those 20 turnovers led to 23 points off turnovers, 13 fast break points. And I think we started looking at that first half. Iowa State ended up with a 7-point lead, which is not something that's insurmountable at halftime. But you start looking at the first 23 possessions for the Longhorns, right? First 24 possessions, actually. I think 50% of those were turnovers. And they ended up with a turnover rate of close to 50% through their first 20-something possessions. You're not going to win like that. And they didn't shoot terrible from the field.
No, they actually they didn't. Andrew Jones was hot.
Yeah, they just gave the ball away too much.
And so we've talked about it. Patrick, you mentioned this. I think it's a good point. And I know we've talked about this team needs to go inside out. More importantly, they just need to get the ball inside. So that can be guard play, putting the ball on the floor. But you had Trey Mitchell and Dylan Dessou, speaking of the inside out. They were fine from the field. At least Dessou was. But they combined for 7 turnovers.
Yeah, and when I say I don't like the inside out of, I don't like the post up inside out of, let's post up one guy.
If you're getting doubled,
slow down this defense. And then the problem is, even when they're kicking the ball out and not getting a turnover, there's 10 seconds left on the clock. There's no way to do anything else there, and you're getting bad shots. It's that you can go inside out, as Kevin's saying, that's driving the paint. It's creating motion where now if 3 guys collapse on you, now, you're at least still in control that you can kick the ball out to where you want it to be.
Yep.
So it's a hard offense to kind of change mid-season. But if you're going to do it and you're going to try to start doing stuff, now's the time because you're still in the easier part of the Big 12 schedule, as silly as it is to say it. You're in the easier part right now.
Yeah.
The second half of your Big 12 schedule is harder.
That's scary.
That's where we get into Texas Tech, Baylor, Kansas, and we're playing both of those games home and away. A lot of that's in February. So you want to get in January as good as you're going to get. And as much as, yeah, I know they're a new team, they're putting stuff together, but this team is probably not going to be completely together next year. So it's not like, oh, we'll build it in the next year and the next year. And No. This is you got to win.
Basketball.
You got to be good by the end of this year.
Yeah.
And so you got to figure out a way to create offense when it starts to be stagnant. I will say a positive of this team, if you're going to see the one positive out of this game, is they didn't give up.
No.
At the end of the half, they made a good run to come back. It should have been 5 at half, but they kind of screwed up. And then they had 7
at half?
Like the end of the first half where they foul the guy and then he hits it from 3/4 court, but they wave it off and he hits 2 free throws. So if they could have just played decent defense to end the first half and not let a guy get open on the outside and foul him. Now he hit that shot, but he's probably not going to hit that shot.
Right.
He throws it up because you fouled him.
Texas now 3-2 in Big 12 play. Baylor lost again. Baylor's 3-2.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the regular season winner of this conference and how many losses they have.
I mean, how much fun is this tournament going to be?
Oh, it's going to be great. But even the regular season, I mean, we're going to have a champion who, off to go back and look at it since 96 when this thing started, but who could have the most losses they've ever had. If I tell you what, it'll certainly be a team that the most losses they've ever had and is still really damn good. So there could have been a really down year in the Big 12 in 99 or something like that. Actually, that was the year Texas won on the Ivan Wagner and Will Clay.
So probably.
Yeah. So to where they ended up having a lot of losses, but we knew they weren't that great of a team nationally. The winner of this conference is going to be great nationally, and they're going to have some losses, Rod.
I do wonder if it'll end up being a situation where it just kind of the best conference ends up having the best teams because you're forged by fire and competition, and you just to be the best you got to beat the best, kind of that scenario. Because in the NFL, we just talked about it with the Cowboys, right? They're coming out of the NFC East, which is a weak division, and you look at the 49ers coming out of the NFC West, which is arguably the toughest division in football, and it seems like that being battle tested out of the NFC West is working better for the 49ers. We'll see how it works out for the Rams and the Cardinals, but at least they got 3 teams in.
Yeah.
SEC is the same way, it seems, right? Or it seems the SEC gives you more battle tested scenarios, so you come out of there forced and fire ready for elite competition.
NFC East, the opposite.
Exactly. As opposed to, I don't know, the Pac-12 or the ACC. SEC or whatever. So I do wonder, are we going to have that effect with the Big 12? Are they going to be battle tested and they come out and dominate the postseason and March Madness? Or are they just going to be worn out and cannibalize each other?
Great question. Great question. I could definitely foresee some 7, 8, 9 seeds that do some damage in their Big 12 teams, and hell, you even get in that second round against a 1 seed, and you're like, no, we've faced this before.
Exactly. Like, no, we're in the tournament every day.
We're not flipped out.
We're in the tournament week in and week out in the Big 12.
Right.
This is basically March Madness here because we play elite competition. I wonder if it's going to have that effect. If you're a Longhorn fan, you're hoping it's going to have that effect for Texas.
Yep. It continues tomorrow night. Kansas State will be in town. Don't forget, as Patrick kind of mentioned, this will be it for Kansas State in the regular season. So you're getting that. They got Kansas State without their head coach and 6 guys. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget, they were down by 6 at the half.
That's true.
In Manhattan.
Yeah.
So we expect, who knows with COVID, but we expect them to be much more at full strength as they come into Austin. Obviously played really well that first half. They didn't have enough energy. The Wildcats didn't in the second half. Texas was able to come back and win comfortably. That'll be tomorrow night at 7:30. We'll have pregame at 7 right here on the Horn. 1 hour to go. This thing has flown by, man. It's always fun on a Monday. We'll get back to the NFL and get back to the boys.